American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson and another great show planned for you today. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me Priscilla Rahn. And am I saying that correctly?
Perfect.
And you are a candidate for CU Regent. And we met at a Christmas party.
We sure did. That was fun.
Yeah, it was a great time. And so I want to talk with you a little bit about that. So we'll focus on you in the second segment and get to know you a little bit better. And so thank you for being in studio.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm really thrilled to be here.
It's great to have you here. And then in the third and fourth segment, we will be talking with Rick Enstrom. And he's a former commissioner, a wildlife commissioner for Colorado. But he also, Enstrom Candies, I need to thank Enstrom Candies. They are my favorite calories in the world, Steve. My favorite calories in the world.
Yes, my neighbor. We get a box of Enstrom from him every year for Christmas. So we're very familiar.
Yeah, I tell you, it's very, very good. So we'll be talking with him about that. And the reason he's coming on is there seems to be this movement to bring the gray wolf back to Colorado. And so we want to chat with him about that. A good idea, bad idea. What is that exactly? So as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, Priscilla, it seems like we shouldn't have to force people to do it.
Exactly. We're here to be free.
And on that note, last night, as many of you may know, I started a group in 2012 of women that really were not very politically active. We just got together to just talk about what was on our heart. And we named it at the time Wine and Tapas to Save the Republic. Well, that group has grown to over 207 women, and we meet twice a month at my house, and basically everybody's welcome. We actually have other groups that are now, they're kind of the sister groups. They're called Tapas and Topics. There's two in Jefferson County, one in Northwest Denver, one in Boulder, one in Fort Collins. There's going to be one opening in Parker. And if you are interested in starting a Tapas and Topics or interested in being part of it, just email me at kim@kimmunson.com. We'll get you started. It's very organic, very grassroots. And last night, something amazing happened. A Reverend C.L. Bryant was our presenter, and we let a guy. Now, actually, some of the Tapas and Topics do have both men and women, but ours is we're sexist. We normally don't have men. But producer Steve showed up, and when I announced that producer Steve was here, the girls went wild. Steve, they just went wild.
Yeah, it was one of those life experiences, all right.
But Reverend C.L. Bryant was something else, wasn't he?
You know, we both of us departed about the same time, and I said, you know, I got to ask you, you were born in Louisiana, right? Oh, yeah, I spent all my formative years in Louisiana. I said, why does a man like you, who's born and raised in Louisiana, come to Colorado? And, you know, he had a very poignant reason for being here. But I am just thrilled that he is here.
Right. He's moved to Colorado.
Because of his whole philosophy in life and, you know, being a black man after, enduring the Obama years and seeing what it was doing to the country. He's making an incredible stand.
He's a senior fellow with Freedom Works, and he's got a really interesting story. He had said that he was with the NAACP in the Dallas area. And he was a really rising star. I mean, he's a dynamic speaker and, had a rising star with the NAACP. And then he was asked to, I don't know if it was present or go to a pro-abortion event. And as he, really looked at what abortion has done to the black community, In fact, Margaret Sanger, who founded Planned Parenthood, was a racist. And one of the reasons she founded Planned Parenthood was they put him in the inner city because she was a racist. And once he realized that he was asked to go to present to this event, he said no. He said his rising star with the NAACP took a dramatic turn downward. But he is a man of courage. He's a man of conviction. And we are lucky to have him here in Colorado because we have a fight on our hands. But I think the thing, Steve, that I found most interesting is he told several stories, but he told the story of his grandfather. His grandfather fought in World War I. His father fought in World War II. And CL did describe, you know, racism is it's a bad thing. It certainly is. But he told the story that he was probably a teenager. He said he had a jalopy with an 8-track. You're too young for that, Priscilla. And he said he was coming down the road to his grandfather's farm, and that they've had that land in their family for, what did he say, 157 years now, I think, Steve. And his grandfather was out working on the farm, and he said he's coming down the road, and he has James Brown, Proud to Be Black, and he's just, you know, cranking it. He's just got it up so loud. And he saw his grandfather start to walk across the field, and he said, I knew my grandpa, when there was something, you know, that he had to say, he was going to say it. And he came up to me and he said, what was it exactly? He said, I didn't go through everything that I did so that you could be proud to be black. I went through everything that I did so that you could be free. Mm. And that took my breath away, Steve.
Yeah, me too. Because, the way he set it up, he says, I always knew what was on my grandpa's mind by the way he was walking. And after when I shut off the car and I saw him approaching the car from, you know, from afar, I knew there was something heavy on his mind and I was about to get a lesson.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty powerful. So, okay, for our quote for today. This is a guy, and Priscilla, you may know him. I continue, as I look for these quotes, this guy's name continues to come up. I look for inspiration and education. Since you're in studio, I went to education. And this guy, George Santayana, I believe it is, he was he was a philosopher, essayist, poet, and novelist. Originally from Spain, Santayana was raised and educated in the United States from the age of 8 and identified himself as an American, although he always retained a valid Spanish passport. He wrote in English and is generally considered an American man of letters. At the age of 48, Santayana left his position at Harvard and returned to Europe permanently, never to return to the United States. He was born in 1863 and he died in 1952. This is what he said. It is possible to be a master in false philosophy, easier, in fact, than to be a master in the truth, because a false philosophy can be made as simple and consistent as one pleases. Pretty heavy stuff, Priscilla.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yep. It's really easy to fall into propaganda, depending on who your ecosystem is and who you're listening to. And I think we're seeing a lot of a movement in education today of finding out what is the truth and looking at our history and making sure we know what the truth is.
Well, and, you know, I came through, I always hate to date myself when I start to talk about this, Steve. You're older than me, Steve. So, but don't you remember where everything became relative? You know, you have your truth, I have my truth.
Exactly.
And I think that is one of the things that we're having such a time in our society now is that if everybody has their truth, then there is no truth. But ultimately, there really is truth.
Absolutely. I mean, we have our own experiences, but that doesn't change what the truth is. There has to, if there's no truth, then what are we doing? I mean, it's because I can treat you any way, or I can have a different philosophy than you, but there is, we have to have that compass, and that's what I firmly believe, for sure.
I had a very wise pastor who's not with us anymore, but when postmodernism was making its surge, he was very concerned about it because he knew what it was going to do to the culture. And anytime, you know, in postmodernism, anytime the word truth pops up, the first question is, whose truth, yours or mine?
Well, and so one of the truths, and I mean, this is really at play, I think, is the American idea. And who was I talking to? Oh, I know. I had breakfast. Well, Stan Everett, who's on the show from time to time and, you know, has a real understanding of the founding. And he said that the words that all men are created equal with these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And he said that Lafayette, you know, Lafayette fought with the George Washington. Lafayette was a Frenchman. And that he, and I didn't know this, Priscilla, you know, you probably do, but because you're a teacher, that Lafayette actually went to South America and wanted to, I don't know, influence a country, I don't know which one it was, on the American founding. And he changed the word from that all men are created equal to more the French Revolution word of all men are born equal. And those two words makes all the difference in the world. If we are created equal, then God gives us our rights. If we're born, then maybe we get into all of these UN rights or the rights that men give, and men, if men can give rights, they can take them away. But if the rights, if the rights are inalienable, and that we are created, you know, from the Creator, and He has given us those rights, that makes all the difference in the world. And that is a foundational truth, Priscilla.
Absolutely. I mean, we know in the Scripture, He knew us in the womb before we were born. That's powerful. That's a powerful thing to remember, that, you know, God knows who we are before we were ever born. And so that's definitely, I agree that we get our inalienable rights from the Creator.
And that is a truth. And that is what we have hung our hat on this this whole American idea, Steve.
Did you say, I'm sorry to change the flow on your, you don't have a funny?
I don't have a funny.
Well, I got one.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason is I was scrambling.
So yeah.
So what's your funny? Okay, let's see if you're funny, okay?
Well, this is in line. Back when we just started the show, you talked about the whole purpose behind your Wednesday night gathering.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of people, women who weren't really in the political realm of knowing what was going on. All right. You know I am a great appreciator of memes.
Yes.
I've definitely become an art form. There are some out there that are just incredibly truthful. There's the word truth again. But keeping in line with the reason for your Wednesday night group.
Okay.
It asks the questions, have you ever noticed that people won't take the time to look up important information, but they'll spend 15 minutes taking a quiz to find out what kind of potato they are?
True that. It's amazing. So we're going to go to break here in just a moment. Before we do that, though, Steve, I thought it was so great last night when I said, this is producer Steve. I mean, the girls knew you, and it's like, this is the guy behind the voice. And that was pretty cool. But we've got a wonderful team, you and Zach and Patty and Keith and Charlie. And Patty does the most amazing research, and we've got an encyclopedia of important things to talk with you about. And I think we're going to get to headlines probably more tomorrow, just because Priscilla's in studio and we're going to talk with Rick Enstrom. But I so appreciate our team, and I appreciate you, our listeners. Each of you, you're treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Go out today, strive for excellence, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And so before we go to break, the big game is right around the corner. Go Chiefs. And the place to watch all the games and the big game is at Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. And if you join them for the big game, you'll be entered for a chance to win a 55-inch HD TV. Problem is if I won it, I wouldn't know how to turn it on and get it to the right channel, Steve. Honestly, I have had a time, I don't watch much TV, and so we have a you know, like an HD TV or something down in the basement, and I wanted to watch something. I had to call my son, and he had to walk through with me. I should not admit that on the air, okay.
In another state, by the way. So you were really reaching out.
That's true. So they have these new roasted wings. Did you get any of the buffalo shrimp last night, Steve?
No, I'm in a situation where I just...
There was hardly any left.
I had no appetite for one. I mean, I'm...
Okay.
Just go, carry on.
Well, there weren't very many left anyway. So Wednesday is dine-in wing day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. And if you don't want to cook, or if you're busy like I was yesterday, you can have Hooters wings and buffalo shrimp delivered right to your front door. More information, go to my website, KimMunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com, KimMunson.com. And take a look at all of my sponsors there. They are all people that I highly recommend. We're going to go to break. Priscilla Ron, who is a candidate for CU Region, is in studio, and we're going to get to know her a little bit better. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, thrilled to have in studio with me Priscilla Ron. You are stepping up to the plate. You've thrown your hat in the ring to run for regent for CU. And first of all, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. So why on earth would you throw your hat in the ring to run for public office?
Well, I have a big passion for education. I'm a 26-year veteran teacher, former principal. I worked at CCU in their School of Ed, and I have been really invested. I'm a strong stakeholder in the future of children and our workforce. And so I decided, why not? I looked at the landscape and I said, I'm highly qualified and I'm ready and I have the energy to do the work.
Well, it is... It's the most important thing that we do as far as what we pass on to our children. I've been concerned about education. I've been concerned about curriculum. I've been concerned maybe about the lack of parents being able to try to go, you know, get their kids into the school that works best for them. What are your thoughts about that, Priscilla?
Yes, I definitely agree. Over the past 26 years, we've definitely seen a change, and education has unfortunately become very, very political. And so we've lost our focus on what's most important, and that's children and education. And parents are smart. When parents have children, one of the first things they start to think about is, like, where are they going to go to school?
I know.
And what does the education landscape look like for them? And especially if you are conservative, you start to think about other dynamics of education. But I have to say, as a mom myself, my son's 14. You know, we're
going to... Bless you.
Yes. And I teach middle school all day long, and I go home to my middle schooler.
There's a special place
like,
in heaven
listen,
for middle school teachers.
I see those eye rolls all day long, and then I go home and I see more of it. But he's amazing. By the way, I have to put a plug. He just got his letter to join National Junior Honor Society, and I couldn't be more proud.
That's fantastic.
I think parents are very smart. They love their kids. They're the number one fans for their kids. And they have a voice. And schools should be community-based, right? And I feel like the community schools model is a great model that people on both sides of the aisle can look at and say, hey, that's something that could work, because that involves, you know, the village. Mm-hmm. It takes a village to raise children. And so I think it's really, really important that parents have a voice in the education system.
So, you know, one of the hot button issues in Colorado is school choice. How do you feel about that?
So once again, yeah, back to that. That is a hot button, because there are people who are concerned about funding. As a teacher and as a teacher in the union, we have these conversations about how do we make sure that all of our students have the resources that they need. And that's what's causing a lot of the friction. So if we can get to the table and talk about creative ways of making sure our public schools are funded adequately. But then there's that conversation where parents are saying, well, I don't feel like my students' needs are being met. Mm-hmm. There's no one size fits all for children. And so I think it's great to have different places where students can go to get their needs met, but also making sure that our public schools are fully funded and we have great resources for all of our kids.
Okay. You mentioned union.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a lot of research on funding. You know, it's kind of like follow the money. Mm-hmm. And so I've done a lot of research on political campaigns, and many of the teachers' unions contribute heavily into political campaigns. And primarily it is on one side. Normally it goes to Democrat candidates. And so I struggle a bit with the union because, you know, I agree. We want to make sure that we are getting money to the teachers and in the classroom that are doing a great job. But yet all this money that's over here playing in the political arena, and you're jumping into the political arena. What's your comments on that, Priscilla?
So this is one of the reasons why I'm jumping in. So one third of the teachers in the teachers union are actually Republican.
Interesting.
A lot of people don't know that. And as I started, as my years in education started to progress, I started to see some of these inequities in the conversation around education. And so that word courage comes to the forefront. I'm like, you know, if you're going to make a change, you have to be in the room. You have to know what's going on. You have to be a part of the conversation. The teachers union is technically nonpartisan, but I felt like it wasn't operating in a nonpartisan, equitable way. Okay. And I said, I want to be a voice in the room. And so my purpose for being in the union and being in leadership is to bring that conservative voice. Everybody in the teachers union knows I'm a Republican. I don't hide that.
Wow.
I lead with that. And
that
so
does take courage. It does,
yes. And I'm a risk taker and I'm a big voice and I'm a champion for conservative values. And fortunately, because my colleagues have had a chance to work with me over the years, they listen to me. We've been able to work together. I've been able to institute change locally, but I want to make a bigger change. And I think we're ready. I work with amazing, amazing educators with big, big hearts. But it takes being in the room to have those conversations. And so that's why I want to be a part of the education system in a bigger way.
Okay, well, so let's talk about that. So being a regent, and I don't think a lot of people know or quite understand, but actually the governing board for CU is elected by the people of Colorado.
Right. It was instituted in the Constitution when Colorado became a state.
So that's where it, okay.
That's where it all came from.
Okay. So you're running, and there's different districts, right? And is there at large as well?
There are two at large seats.
Okay. But are you running for?
CD6.
Okay. So each of the congressional districts have a representative, and then there's two at large. Okay. So college campuses. Many times it's becoming very closed to diversity of thought. And I think diversity of thought is probably the most important kind of diversity that we have. And I hope that in America we can start to unite behind, you know, the American idea, this, you know, that every person is created equal, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. But a lot of those voices are getting tapped down. And so it's a big order. So Priscilla, what's your comments on that?
It's really important that our young people have a safe space to be free and to voice their values and their thoughts. I mean, they're coming to us, they're young, they're 18, 19 years old. A lot of them are coming with thoughts from how they were raised. And then they're learning and they're growing and they're meeting people with different thoughts and different values. But some of those really core values, when we're talking about those religious freedoms that we have, any child should be able to go to a college campus and not feel intimidated to profess their beliefs, their faith. And I grew up in a Christian household, and I know that I felt like I had to be silent a lot of times and because of facing ridicule. And so I'm really committed to making sure that our children that come to CU, any campus, have that freedom protected.
Okay. What about curriculum? Because my understanding is that there are professors that basically are pushing, you know, a specific ideology that may be antithetical to, you know, really the American idea. And so curriculum, I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
So when we look at the role of a CU regent, CU regents don't actually write curriculum for the university system. It's really supposed to come from the chancellors are from each campus are responsible for making sure that they're working with the faculty and creating different curriculum. Now, what a regent does do is they approve different graduate degree programs.
Okay.
But the nuances of those are not the role of a CU regent.
Okay. And does the CU regent hire the chancellors?
Yes.
Okay, so that's kind of the hierarchy on that. Okay, okay. Well, we're just about out of time on this. First of all, thank you for being here. And how can people get more information about you, Priscilla, Ron?
So people can go to my website at Ron for CU Regent, and that's spelled R-A-H-N for CU Regent. I have a Facebook page. Would love if you would like and follow my Ron for CU Regent on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the great social media platforms. You can find me.
She's clearly younger than us, Steve. She's got all of those platforms going there. So, again, it's Ron for
CU Regent.
Okay. So, R-A-H-N for CU Regent dot com.
Yes.
Okay, great. Priscilla, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Kim.
Great to have you here. And I sent you your picture behind the microphone. Yay. So that's pretty cool. So let's jump over here to Jason McBride. Jason, how are you today?
Oh, just absolutely spectacular.
I love it. That's good. Mr. Positive here. Unlike Steve, he's kind of bah humbug today. So.
Well, he said he crashed your party last night and had a great time. I mean, how do you go to a party with a great speaker? You know, there's
30
only
women.
Two guys and 30 women and come out of it not pleased.
He's just tired, I think. He got up
early.
You
guys wore him out.
Yeah.
Like I said, we need to talk off air, Jason.
Okay. So.
Well, I don't want, you know, every time we talk off air, you say things that shocked me so bad that I have to go to confession afterwards.
Okay, I call.
Just to get your words out of my system.
I call Bravo Sierra on that, and you know what I mean.
Okay. You, gentlemen, I think I'll let you take this up offline, please. Okay.
Okay.
So, Jason. Tuesday, you mentioned an old market adage that says if you buy the weakest sector from last year, then this year it's often the biggest winner.
Yeah, that's right, Kim. Your memory is too good for my own good.
And also on Tuesday, when I asked you if it was a good strategy, you said that you'd talk about it in more detail later this week, and the facts would be an eye-opener. So it's later in the week. What's the verdict?
Well, Kim, your wish is my command. I've written up a piece on this subject that our listeners can get for free, but I'd say, yeah, let's talk about it a little bit.
Okay, so for example, looking at the info you sent, energy was the weakest sector in 2019. So if one were to buy into this method, they'd expect energy stocks to be the biggest winner this year. But how's that worked out historically?
Well, Kim, if we go back 12 years to 2008, only three times in 2012, 14, and 16 has the previous year's worst sector become the next year's best sector. So three out of 12, I don't really find that to be too impressive.
It doesn't seem that convincing.
No, not really. And here's another fun fact about it. Over the last 12 years, three times the previous year's worst sector was also the worst sector the following year. That happened in 2008, 2015, and then just last year.
Okay, so you got punished just as often as you got rewarded. And so we could just flip a coin, and if that would be what it would be, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Kim, if that's what you're after, and the other 6 years, they were a mixed bag, but the question really overall is how well did you do if you just followed this strategy year after year? Because that's what you have to do with something like this, Kim. If they say it's an automatic thing, you can't pick and choose. You just got to do it year after year because it's supposed to work.
Okay.
Well, the answer there's not so hot either. Over the 12 years of strategy, had an average gain that was just shy of 8%. So that's not terrible, but honestly, Kim, if you just stayed invested in all the sectors of the S&P, that did almost 11% over the same time period. So sometimes just being a couch potato is the best thing to do.
Well, I think this kind of info is really terrific. And we're always hearing about, you know, some trick that's supposed to make investing easy or some surefire way to make money. But, Jason, you dissect several of these type of strategies every year and separate the wheat from the chaff, and some of them do really good, but I'm with you. This particular one seems a bit like a dud.
Well, thanks, Kim, and we'll talk about some other variations of this over the next few days. And, yeah, really why it's not that easy to just, you know, buy low and sell high. And the report that I mentioned earlier has a really good dose of solid info on this. You can get that at airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. You'll be able to just get a downloaded version, or you can ask us to mail you a hard copy. So get that report. And while you're at it, save your seat at one of our upcoming workshops on how to reduce your taxes. So, Kim, again, the report is free. You could get that at airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com.
You know, Jason, you have such amazing nuggets of information that you put together each morning. I so appreciate it, and certainly would recommend that people get this. The more that you can learn, knowledge can become power. And you, Jason, you've been in the business for a while, and so you've seen the ups and downs, and you and your colleagues at Presidential, you know, you're real pros. And so definitely get that report. I think it's going to be really interesting. And again, that's airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. Jason, we will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks, Kim.
Okay. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Rick Enstrom. He's a former commissioner here in Colorado, a wildlife commissioner. And we want to talk about this whole gray wolf issue. And so this is Kim Munson. Priscilla Rons, candidate for CU Regent, is in studio, and we'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson and thrilled to have a conversation with Rick Enstrom. He is a former commissioner, wildlife commissioner for the state of Colorado. But first and foremost, Rick Enstrom, your company makes the best calories in the world is all I can say. I love your toffee.
Well, thank you, Kim. And it's not my toffee. It's a family business and I'm semi-retired. Yeah, but I my wife still assigns me a lot of responsibility on a daily basis to kind of help out around the program. She's the brains of the outfit over here on this side. My sister and her husband, Doug, are in Grand Junction that are the big operators of the company.
Well, you know, actually one of my neighbors gave us a box of toffee for Christmas. And I was kind of like, in a way, I was almost hoping I wouldn't get that because I can walk by a whole bunch of sweets, but I cannot walk by the Enstrom toffee. I just can't do it.
And I can't walk by a tray of turtles. We all have an addiction.
Ooh, I may have to try those too. So
they're pretty good.
Yeah. So, but Rick Enstrom, there is this whole conversation about the gray wolf being reintroduced into Colorado, and I don't know if you're familiar with something called the Overton window, but it's a window from on an issue. There can be, you know, one side clear to the other, and then right down the middle might be initially kind of where that window is. And then you see public opinion can move one way or another, and it can be influenced by education. It can be influenced by culture. And about, I want to say 4 years ago, I was driving by, you know, one of our neighbors that, you know, from bumper stickers, I would say that they probably lean really, really far left. And I saw a bumper sticker that said, "I love wolves." And I'm kind of like, that's interesting. And then I was downtown, oh, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and down kind of by Coors Field, and there was this big mural on the side of a building, and it was a gray wolf, and it said something, I think, like, "I love wolves." I'm like, that's interesting. And then it looks like there may be like a ballot initiative. So what is going on with this romance of the gray wolf here in Colorado?
Well, it's a hot topic, and we may have a ballot initiative that forces the Division of Wildlife's hands to enter into negotiations with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which retains jurisdiction over the wolf. But there's a recent CSU study that was released, I think, 2 or 3 days ago that shows pretty good resort. It's kind of one of those support. It's one of those kind of goofy polls. It's not a political poll that we usually see for those of us that dabble in politics from time to time. But it wasn't a push poll either. And wolf support runs the spectrum. One of my neighbors, Ray, over here, he has a wolf license plate on his car, and he's the most fire-breathing conservative guy I ever met.
Interesting.
So, it's running the spectrum. So in popularity, I think a few wolves, people enjoy that concept. Dumping 1,000 of them indiscriminately across the landscape, I don't think will be popular or prudent.
Okay, now, how did the wolf come to not be in Colorado? How did that happen?
Well, they were extirpated 100 years ago because they were incompatible with the livestock industry primarily, and people lived in small ranches out across the landscape and didn't enjoy their presence, and so they were killed off across the country and then brought back. We have two populations of wolves down south. We have the Mexican gray wolf, and up in Moffat County, where they recently found the pack that's been coming in and out of Colorado for years with six northern gray wolves. So we've got them on both borders, and they're edging in. And in 2014, there was a working wolf group appointed by Governor Owens that I had the pleasure of honor of serving on, with a broad spectrum of stakeholders. We had wool growers, cattlemen, environmentalists, just regular citizens. And we put together a pretty good plan that said we would accommodate that wolf. If it came into Colorado, we'd keep an eye on them. And if they became a problem with the livestock industry or others, then we'd have another discussion, which is still a prudent course of action in my mind. But wildlife management by ballot initiative and the unintended consequences is very poor public policy.
Rick, why do you think there's such a push this makes it a real push, the fact that it might put it, you know, on the ballot. Why do you think there's such a push for this?
I think it's probably the romantic notion of the wolf howling at the moon, and there are folks that also think that in the natural scope of things, they could be used to control elk populations and deer populations, which they've done very well in Wyoming with. They're down to 10% of the elk herd that they used to have because the wolves are very efficient predators, and they need a lot of food. A wolf, a big northern gray wolf, can weigh 150 pounds, and they can walk 25 miles in a day just at a regular trot, just a regular lope.
Okay.
They cover a lot of ground.
So, and that has been one of the questions. I was talking with a friend of mine about this, and she said, well, Kim, it's part of the, you know, the circle of life. It's part of the ecosystem. So, yes, they should come back. However, to have the elk population up in Wyoming be reduced so significantly, I don't know. I'm struggling a bit with this, Rick. Help me out.
Well, the problem is fiscal, primarily. You know, the Division of Wildlife depends on the sale of out-of-state big game licenses to support all the operations in the Division of Wildlife, from fish stocking to management of the greenback trout or Preble's Meadow jumping mice that are real popular.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, education, legislative effects, all of the work. It's one of the largest budgets in the state of Colorado, about $100 million. And a lot of that, so if we start knocking back the population of our elk herd, which is right now stressed, we are under objective for deer and elk in like 64 of the game management units in Colorado. And it ebbs and flows, but you dump wolves into the mix and it makes it, you know, we don't have a very good product then to sell to out-of-state hunters which then affects our ability to staff the Division of Wildlife and do the good work that the folks in the pickup trucks and the Division of Wildlife do on a daily basis. And their time is being eaten up right now. Two wildlife officers and all our public information officers are now dealing with wolves, and that's just on the clock and being paid for by sportsmen's dollars. And then if there's game damage problem with livestock, this ballot initiative states that the Wildlife Game Cash Fund will pay for those conflicts. And that's hunting and fishing. Why should fishermen be paying the 800,000 fishing licenses that are sold in the state of Colorado? Why should those people be responsible for wolf introduction? So it's the fiscal part that's of concern to me. I like wolves as much as the next guy. I don't hate the things. I just don't think we ought to dump 1,000 of them across the landscape. And I don't think the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which retains jurisdiction, is going to think so either.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions here, and I better write one down, otherwise I'm going to forget that. But that the first thing, let me just make, because I think we're going to go to break, and I want to ask, I'll just put it out there so that I don't forget. Steve, help me on this as well. But you dump 1,000 wolves into Colorado, and it seems to me at some point in time that going hiking and fishing, that there might become some danger in that. Somebody sent me a picture from up in Wyoming that they were driving along the road, and there was several wolves, and they're big, as you mentioned. I mean, they're wolves, and I mean, they're big, and they look mean. I mean, at some point in time, you get too many of them, there could start to be danger maybe out when we're out hiking and doing that. So let's go to break on that. Leave that question out there, Rick. And when we come back, I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. And then the other point that I wanted to make is in a hunting and fishing, I mean, I guess you could say that the hunter in a way is a predator because, you know, they are killing an elk, and a wolf is also a predator. And it just seems like in some way that they're, you know, this would, you know, move away from man getting to be in this whole ecosystem as well. And we've been part of it, you know, for millennia as well. So let's go to break. I'm talking with Rick Enstrom, former wildlife commissioner here in Colorado, about this gray wolf issue, which is becoming more and more politicized. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com, kimmunson.com. On the studio with me, on the phone with me is Rick Enstrom. In studio with me is Priscilla Ron, CU Regent candidate. Rick, I had a couple of questions on the table, and the first one was kind of the circle of life question. You know, all of us have seen The Lion King and you know, seeing that whole circle of life, and then the wolf would be part of that, you know, calling the elk herds, the deer herds. But many times it seems like there's a disdain for man, the hunter. And I know a lot of hunters, and they are people that care deeply about wildlife. They care deeply about the environment. And man has also been part of that whole circle of life. So how would you match that up, Rick?
And we also pay for all the wildlife management in Colorado. Any organization that has conservation after it usually doesn't pay anything into the management of wildlife anywhere.
They're
political organizations. But hunters and fishermen do. And you've seen the Hug a Hunter, a Hug an Angler program put on by the Division of Wildlife that kind of lets the public know how important hunting and fishing is to wildlife management in Colorado. Wildlife is managed in Colorado and across North America in something that's called the North American Model of Big Game Management, wherein the population of these animals is controlled by the harvest of the female of the species. That's how we keep these herds under control, and a lot of thought process goes into and a lot of modeling goes into how many of these animals can be taken. You interject the wolf into that discussion, and they're unmanageable, and they just go out and eat, and they've got to eat a lot because they're big animals. They're running in packs, and so that model goes out the window, and we have to start working around it. And they're a lot more efficient than we are. They don't have seasons. They've got to eat every day, and they'll start in one corner, start like they have out in Moffett County in Unit 201, which is one of our very best elk herds in the state of Colorado, and they're going to set up shop and start branching out as the packs need to expand. And the folks that operate cattle and wool operations up in northwest Colorado and Moffett County are naturally quite concerned.
Well, yeah, because the wolf was going to eat anything, whether or not it's an elk, a deer, or whether or not it's livestock, which is being raised to feed people as well. And the other thing is, so I think I'm understanding a little bit more, and I know I probably sound like such a novice, but I know hunters, and they always talk about, did you get this tag or that tag? So each year, there's only a certain amount, I guess, wildlife management takes a look at how many different, I guess, tags that would be sold, and
by various uses of methods of take. There's archery hunting, muzzle loading, and to spread out that use for the most number of people, there are short windows, usually two weekends, and a week in between for four or five different weeks through the hunting season. And I don't know why, Kim, why I have to be the guy everybody's calling about this wolf deal. I did serve on the wolf working group and was a state wildlife commissioner for 8 years, 3 years as chairman. Nobody's calling the Division of Wildlife because all they're going to get is a public information officer. The rest of the Division of Wildlife's been instructed to stick to a talking points memo that has about 6 points. And you're not going to hear from any biologists. You're not going to hear from any wildlife officers or wildlife technicians because they've been instructed to sit on their hands and let this political process play out, which is a big disappointment because I know some of them really well, and they're deeply concerned.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. And in Complete Colorado, there had been a piece about this particular issue. And so that's why I reached out to you on this. And, you know, that is, you know, as these issues become politicized here in America, instead of having this honest conversation about the issue, people pull back and don't engage. And we need to have these honest conversations about this, Rick. Now, Priscilla, you're shaking your head. Is there something you wanted to jump in and say?
I think it creates winners and losers in a system where we need to be working collaboratively to problem solve. And we get so focused on partisanship that we miss the work.
Mm-hmm. And so, Rick, this is going to probably be on the ballot, do you think? I mean, there's pressure. What's the political landscape look like? Is there pressure to do something down at the legislature? And if they don't, this is going to be on the ballot, or what's that look like?
I don't think the legislature is going to get involved. I think there's a ballot initiative. It's been approved by the Secretary of State, and this thing's going to play itself out. On one side, you've got some environmentally oriented groups that are proponents. You've got two groups of folks that are the Cattlemen's and Wool Growers Association. That's they're kind of putting it stop the wolves, and then the hunters and anglers have another group, No Wolves Colorado or something like that. So they're organized sides now butting heads on this issue. But I think it's really going to be decided, like a lot of political issues, at the kitchen table with the family in discussion with your neighbors. And so I think having the proper information out there and everybody having a polite, honest, open conversation about this and the ramifications attached there too is very important. So I really appreciate being on with you today, because wildlife management through ballot initiative has proven to be a miserable failure. We did that with trapping years ago, and now we have and baiting. And now there are so many bears in Colorado, in some areas up to 2 per square mile out in the Southwest, that it's affecting, it's part of that elk herd, deer herd problem that we're seeing in having inadequate populations in some of the game management units.
Okay. So, Rick, last question. I'm just seeing it in my mind, because when I saw this picture sent to me by somebody that lives up in Wyoming of these wolves walking right along the highway, okay, and I'm like, they are impressive. I mean, if you're in your car, it's fine. If you weren't in your car, it would take your breath away. So I'm just envisioning, you know, here in Colorado, we like the outdoors, mom, stroller, you know, running, you know, maybe in the foothills or something, with her, you know, her baby in the stroller, and, you know, possibly if we have all these wolves being attacked, I mean, is there going to be danger at some point in time for people that want to go out and enjoy the great outdoors here in Colorado? I know that's a tough question, but what do you think?
It's not. We don't see many interactions between humans and wolves. I mean, they don't like people. And coyotes don't like people, but the problem becomes they get habituated. And that means comfortable around humans, and then starting to lose their fear of humans, and the natural fear, because we are further up the food chain. But down at my ranch in southeast Colorado, we have packs of coyotes. I can hear 5 or 6 packs of coyotes firing off in the night and in the dark. And when I'm walking down to the duck blind, it makes me and my dog Poppy a little edgy.
Mm-hmm.
But a coyote weighs 25 to 35 pounds. A wolf weighs 125 pounds, and a pack of them is a very daunting deal. If I was out tent camping and needed to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom outside the tent, I would want a flashlight and a gun just for my own purposes. It's going to change the landscape. The real winners here are going to be the folks that sell RVs. The losers are going to be the folks that are selling tents to folks. Because I think a camper would give you a little more of a secure feeling. But the interactions between wolves and humans in this day and age are probably not the bigger part of the discussion.
But if you I mean, are they talking about 1,000? I mean, you introduce 1,000 and then they procreate. It could get interesting rather quickly, I think.
The Fish and Wildlife Service is not going to allow that to occur. I mean, it's an endangered, threatened species, depending on which part, which wolf, and which area. But then again, up in Wyoming, they're a shoot-on-sight animal now because their population, and it only took them 10 years to get to that point. Problem between Colorado and Wyoming is they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres that nobody ever sees. Colorado's got a darn house and a living center everywhere now, except for some of the wilderness areas. It's not the same landscape.
Okay,
we had wolves 100 years ago running around here, and they weren't popular. You can imagine adding, I don't know what the population of Colorado is right now, like 3.5 million, 4 million.
I think it's about 5.5 million now.
5.5 million?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then and try and get that same wolf population load with all of those folks, there are going to be conflicts of all kinds of regards. But the wolves are coming. The wolf plan addresses that. We've got a great plan. They're coming from both sides. The Mexican grays are coming down south. Northern gray wolf is coming up from above in Wyoming and Idaho. We just ought to let nature take its course and manage it sensibly without a few well-meaning but not educated wildlife folks causing a problem.
Okay. I think those are the words that I think that's the takeaway I'm getting on this, Rick, is that we need to let nature take its course, but also with wildlife management. And so nature taking its course, but man is also part of this whole thing. And that's where the wildlife management comes into. So final thought, Rick, we're just about out of time. What would you say to our listeners?
Well, talk to your folks, talk to your family, get educated. Read that article that I did with Scott Weiser mm-hmm. on January 3rd in Complete Colorado. That thing had 49,800 shares. Just a few, almost 50,000 shares on that one article. People are very hungry to have information on this issue. So pay attention. Have a polite, civil conversation with your friends and neighbors. And take some of these things that are presented in that article to just shine a little common sense into a very emotional subject.
What a refreshing thing, Rick Enstrom, a little common sense. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Kim Munson Show.
Kim and Steve, thanks a million. You guys have a great day.
You too. And Priscilla Ron, thank you so much. Your candidate for CU Regent, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It's been a great time.
It's been awesome.
Okay, and so today, our quote for today is from George Santayana, and he said, "The wisest mind has something yet to learn." Priscilla, I got that for you. What
awesome.
Do you think?
Thank you so much. I'm ready to go meet my pack.
Those junior high kids. So again, George Santayana, "The wisest mind has something yet to learn." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Turning further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them.